Usually when we crack open a fresh stack of reports for the new year, we're dealing with the standard trend forecasting. It's usually fairly benign stuff. You
Right.
know the drill. 2026 is the year of the smart toaster. Or augmented reality glasses are finally going to fit on your face without looking ridiculous.
The usual gadget cycle hype.
Yeah.
It's fun, but it's mostly noise.
Exactly. But digging through this collection of research we have today, we've got technical breakdowns from Texas A&M, heavy geopolitical analysis from the Council on Foreign Relations, and a really striking editorial from Nexus issue 20. This doesn't feel like a gadget cycle. It
No,
feels like a warning shot.
it's definitely heavier. The editors at Nexus are calling early 2026 the inflection point, and they aren't using that term lightly.
Not at all. They're being literal.
Right. In calculus, an inflection point is where the curve changes. It's that moment the slope stops being gradual and manageable and suddenly just goes vertical. It's a point where linear change becomes, well, exponential reality.
And the consensus across all these sources that we are standing right at the bottom of that vertical climb. The whole premise is that 2026 is the specific year AI transitions from being a cool experiment,
A productivity
a
hack.
productivity hack, into, well, hard infrastructure.
The transition from assistant to reality. And if we're being honest about the Council on Foreign Relations report, the transition from tool to weapon.
That is the part that stood out to me, and we are going to get into that. It feels like we're walking a tightrope this year. So for this deep dive, we're going to unpack this inflection point in three distinct layers.
Okay.
We need to talk about the physical capabilities when code literally gets legs, and then we have to get into the spooky layer, machines that have developed a form of intuition.
And then the most subtle but probably most dangerous layer, the philosophical trap, the cognitive atrophy that happens when the machine gets smarter than the operator.
Right. But let's set the stakes first. David Espindola's intro in Nexus really hammers this home. He argues that the decisions made now in 2026 are going to dictate the balance of power for the next 30 years.
It's crunch time.
This isn't a wait and see situation.
Not at all. And the reason for that urgency is just the sheer acceleration of capability. It's moving faster than policy, certainly faster than our ability to adapt.
Which brings us to the thing that keeps the engineers up at night. The self-improving code. The CFR analysis highlights this as the threshold moment. We've moved past humans writing software for machines.
We've entered the era where machines write software for machines. And this is distinct from just Copilot or autocomplete, which I think a lot of people are used to.
Oh,
This
yeah.
isn't just suggesting the next line of code.
No, this is not about helping a developer fix a missing semicolon or write a basic website script.
No, we are talking about systems like AlphaDev. The sources detail how these AI models aren't just patching bugs, they are discovering new algorithms. They are finding efficiencies in sorting data or routing information that humans just missed for 50 years.
I read about that. AlphaDev found a sorting algorithm that was something like 70% faster for short sequences than anything human computer scientists had ever invented.
Yeah.
It's the difference between a mechanic fixing your engine and a mechanic inventing a new form of physics to make the engine obsolete.
That's a great way to put it. And this validates a prediction from way back in 1965 by a guy named Irving John Good. He called it the intelligence explosion.
The ultra intelligent machine theory, I looked that up.
Exactly. And the logic is brutally simple. If you have a machine intelligent enough to rewrite its own source code to be smarter, then that new smarter machine is even better at rewriting itself.
It's a compounding interest loop.
It's a runaway feedback loop. And the CFR report points out that we have all the ingredients now. We have the speed, we have the scale. The only thing missing, the missing piece, as they call it, is AGI.
Artificial general intelligence, flexible reasoning. Because right
Yeah.
now, AlphaDev is great at sorting numbers, but it can't, write a sonnet or negotiate a peace treaty.
It's still narrow, not yet, but the terror inherent in this report is that once that flexible reasoning unlocks, once you combine AGI with this self-improving capability, the gap between human level and superintelligence just
It's
vanishes.
not a curve
It
anymore.
creates a vertical line on the graph. The timeline condenses from decades to days.
So we're sitting on a powder keg of code, waiting for the AGI match to light it. But the other thing that makes 2026 different, and this is where the Texas A&M report comes in, is that this intelligence isn't stuck on a server farm anymore.
Right.
It's getting a body.
Embodied AI. This is where the digital world smashes into the physical world.
I was reading the section on Boston Dynamics and the new Atlas robot. I mean, we've all seen the videos of the robots doing backflips or dancing.
Sure.
But the report says the way they move has fundamentally changed. It's not just a better motor.
It has. And this is a crucial distinction for everyone to understand. Old robots, the ones in car factories for the last 40 years, they were blind. They were scripted. Move arm x-axis 30 centimeters. If the car part was an inch to the left, the robot would smash it, or the whole line would jam. They were dumb machines.
They're player pianos. If you moved the piano, the music stopped.
Exactly. Alice is a jazz musician. It's using reinforcement learning on these massive NVIDIA chips.
Yeah.
It's not being told how to move. It's given a goal. Pick up that strut.
And then it just figures it out.
It runs millions of digital simulations in a physics engine, failing millions of times, learning from every single failure until it figures out the optimal movement strategy.
So when we see it stumbling and recovering in those videos, that's not a pre-programmed stumble routine.
No.
That's the robot actually feeling its balance shifting and correcting in real time, just like a human would.
Correct. It has proprioception. It understands its body and space. And the geopolitical angle here, it cannot be overstated. The Nexus overview makes it clear.
Yeah.
This is the new space race.
Between the U.S. and China. The report was pretty explicit about that.
Absolutely. Think about infrastructure. If you have a fleet of autonomous, embodied AI robots that can repair bridges, build seawalls, or dismantle a nuclear facility without human intervention, that's a strategic asset on the level of an aircraft carrier.
Right. It changes what a nation is capable of.
Of building and maintaining.
Or, as the report grimly notes, a fleet that can fight urban warfare.
That's the unspoken implication. If it can navigate a factory floor full of debris, it can navigate a battlefield. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't get scared. And if it's running on that self-optimizing code,
it learns from every engagement.
It learns.
Okay, so we have the physical layer robots that learn like athletes.
Yeah.
And the software layer code that evolves. But I want to pivot to the layer that, honestly, it unsettled me the most. The cognitive layer.
The spooky stuff.
Yeah. There's a project out of Texas A&M and KAIST called OmniPredict. On paper, it sounds boring. Traffic safety systems. But when you dig into how it works, it feels like we're crossing a line.
It's fascinating technology. But agree, it's unnerving. It's using a multimodal large language model, so an AI that can see video, read text, and process data all at once, to analyze pedestrians.
But it's not just seeing person A is at location B?
No. Traditional sensors calculate trajectory. Target is moving north at 3 mph. That's just physics. OmniPredict analyzes context. It looks at the pedestrian's posture. Is their head turned? Or are they looking at their phone?
The little thing.
The little things. What is the weather like? Is there a crosswalk nearby? Is their gait hesitant or confident?
And it uses all that to predict intention.
That's the key word, intention. The system can predict that you're going to jaywalk before you have physically shifted your weight to step off the curb.
That's like Minority Report. It knows what I'm going to do before I do it.
It effectively creates machine intuition. And the researchers are very open about the fact that this isn't just for avoiding fender benders.
Right. They mention military situational awareness explicitly in the source material.
Imagine a surveillance system that doesn't just tell you a crowd is gathering. It tells you the crowd is becoming hostile. It predicts the riot before the first rock is thrown.
It's reading the vibe of the room.
But with mathematical precision, it offers situational awareness that is vastly superior to a human operator just staring at a screen.
That connects to this other bizarre finding from the BBC source about optical illusions. This was a real wait what moment for me.
It's a great experiment. Researchers showed classic optical illusions, like the static images that look like they're spinning to deep neural networks.
And the AI got tricked.
It saw the movement. It reported that the static image was moving.
Which shouldn't happen, right? An AI just looks at pixel values. Pixel 45 is gray, pixel 46 is white. Nothing is moving. So why does the computer see the illusion?
Because, as it turns out, sophisticated AI processes reality the same way our brains do. It uses something called predictive coding.
Let's unpack that, because I think most people assume their eyes work like cameras.
Right. We think we are cameras, just recording what is there. But we aren't. Our brains are lazy, or rather, efficient.
Okay.
We don't passively process every photon of light that hits our retina. That would take too much energy. Our brains would overheat. Instead, our brain confidently projects a prediction of what we expect to see.
So I expect the floor to be there, so I see the floor.
Exactly. You project that reality, and then your eyes just scan for errors. You're only updating the prediction when something changes. We are effectively hallucinating our reality and just correcting it on the fly.
We construct the world based on probability.
We do. And because these AI models are trained on massive data sets of human perception and video, they have adopted the same shortcut. They are predicting the motion because the pattern suggests motion.
So they are optimizing for the most likely outcome, not the raw data.
Exactly. We're accidentally reverse engineering consciousness.
And finding out it has the same bugs we do.
We're building a digital mirror,
mm-hmm.
and we're finding out that the mirror has the same blind spots we do.
That is simultaneously so cool and so terrifying, because if it processes reality like us, and it can predict our intentions better than we can, we are getting very close to a machine that understands us better than we understand ourselves.
And that leads us directly to the warning from John Nosta.
Mm.
Because while we are marveling at how human the AI is becoming, he's arguing that the interaction is making us less intelligent.
The anti-intelligence concept? I have to admit, this hit home. I use these tools every day. I love getting the quick answer.
We all do. It's efficient.
I love skipping the reading, but Nosta argues that efficiency is the enemy of understanding.
He contrasts the human way of learning with the AI way.
Right.
Think about the last time you truly mastered a difficult concept, maybe learning a new language or coding or even a complex strategy game.
It was miserable. It was just confusion and failure, trying again, reading three different guides, swearing at the screen.
That friction is the learning. That struggle is your brain physically rewiring itself, building new neural pathways. Confusion is the sweat of cognitive exercise.
You have to go through the struggle phase to get to the structure phase.
Exactly.
And the AI way.
Structure, mm-hmm. coherence, fluency. Immediately, you ask a prompt and you get a perfect, confident, bulleted list.
It skips the struggle.
It skips the thinking. Nosta calls it the illusion of comprehension. You read the polished answer and you nod and say, I get it. But you don't.
Not really.
You just recognize the pattern. You haven't done the heavy lifting to actually model that concept in your own mind.
It's a difference between using a GPS to get somewhere and actually knowing the city.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, yeah. If the GPS dies, I'm lost. I don't know the landmarks.
Precisely. And if we outsource all our friction to AI, if we never struggle with a problem, we risk cognitive atrophy. We start thinking backward. We expect the answer before we've even formulated the question.
There was a technical distinction the sources made here, too, about vectors versus experience. I thought that was a crucial point. It is fundamental. AI understands concepts by mapping them as mathematical vectors in a hyperdimensional space. It knows king is close to queen mathematically. It knows sadness is close to tears.
But it doesn't know what a monarchy feels like.
Right, or the physical sensation of crying.
The AI knows the map. We've walked the territory.
And the danger is that we start trusting the map more than the territory. We start shaping our thinking to fit the AI's output rather than using the AI to expand our thinking.
Okay, so if we look at the board, we have robots that learn through simulation, software that writes itself, algorithms that predict our intentions, and a user interface that seduces us into being stupid.
When you summarize it like that, it sounds like we're doomed.
It sounds bleak. But we have to pivot to the survival guide. The Business Insider piece frames AI as the sixth element.
It's a poetic framing, but I think it's accurate. You have the classical elements, fire, earth, water. Then you have the civilizational elements, language, mathematics, electricity. And now, AI.
It's becoming elemental.
Meaning, it's becoming invisible.
Mm.
You don't opt out of electricity. You can't really opt out of using language. Soon, you won't be able to opt out of AI.
It's the water we swim in.
It will be the substrate of the economy.
So if it's everywhere, and it's smarter than us and faster than us, what is the human moat? Psychology Today had a take on this that I found actually kind of hopeful.
Michelle Perchuk's analysis. She argues that in the 2026 workplace, trying to compete with AI on its home turf speed, data processing, code generation, is a suicide mission.
You lose.
You will lose. Don't try to be a better calculator than the calculator.
Right.
The moat is emotional intelligence, EQ.
Mm-hmm.
But not just being nice. We're talking about high-level strategic intuition.
Give me an example of that, because EQ gets thrown around as a buzzword a lot.
Okay. Think about a high-stakes board meeting. The AI can transcribe the notes perfectly. It can even summarize the key action items and predict the financial outcome of a decision.
Sure.
But can it sense that the CFO is hesitant about the budget because she's worried about a merger that hasn't been announced yet?
No, that's not in the data.
Can it realize that the marketing VP is agreeing verbally, but his body language says he's going to sabotage the project the moment he leaves the room?
No way. It can predict a pedestrian's intention, maybe, but high-level corporate politics. That's nuance. That's history.
That's the human edge, the unsaid, the subtext, trust building. The source argues that the competitive advantage of the future isn't knowing the answer. It's knowing which question actually matters to the people in the room.
So the challenge of 2026 isn't learn to code, because the AI is doing that. It's doubling down on the stuff we used to call soft skills.
The soft skills are becoming the hard currency. As the Nexus editor put it, the question isn't whether we can compete with superintelligence. It's whether we can preserve the qualities that make us irreplaceable.
Empathy, moral judgment, creative rebellion.
Things like that.
That brings us full circle to the inflection point. I think I understand the term better now. It's not just a tech inflection point.
It's a human one.
We've covered a massive amount of ground here. Self-coding software loops, embodied AI learning physics, predictive coding, the cognitive trap of the easy answer.
It's a lot, but I want to go back to David Espindola's line. The pen is still in our hands for now.
That's the critical takeaway, right? This future isn't a movie we're watching. We're in it.
We are currently deciding how much agency we hand over. 2026 is the year we decide. Do we let AI make us passive consumers of answers? Or do we use it to handle the drudgery so we can focus on the high-level, uniquely human work?
It's a choice. Active operator or passive consumer.
And we have to make it now. Because with the speed of these feedback loops, that alpha dev cycle we talked about, we might not get to make the choice later.
Once the intelligence explosion happens, the rules change.
The rules change.
I want to leave everyone with a thought that's been stuck in my head since reading about the OmniPredict system. It's a bit haunting.
Let's hear it.
If we have AI that is learning to predict our behaviors and intentions better than we can predict them ourselves, and at the same time, we are happily outsourcing our critical thinking to these systems because it's easier, at what point do the tools start using us?
That is the question.
Are we the users, or are we just the training data for the next version? Something to chew on. We'll catch you in the next deep dive. Stay curious.
Stay critical.
Yeah.
And stay human.